All right, this is Shady
and Tiffany the Last,
and we're at the Independent in San Francisco with legendary reggae band Steel Pulse, Mr. Hines.
All right.
Enough blessings to each and everyone.
Let me wipe them out. Rock against racism, smash it. Rock against fascism, smash it. Rock against Nazism, Mr. Smash it. I've come to conclusion that, we're gonna hunt, the National Front. Yes, we are. We're gonna hunt, the National Front. Cause they believe in apartheid more. For that, we're gonna whoop their hides. For all my people that cheated and lied. Hey, I won't rest till I'm satisfied. The National.
First question we have for you tonight. The majority of your music is politically and socially motivated. What comes first for you, the music or the politics, and can they exist without one or the other?
It all depends what frame of mind I'm in. Lyrically, you know, I tend to, you know, socialize, and I tend to meet people, read. So the lyrics can come first. And then I sort of come along with the music, and then try to find a music that fits the mood of what the lyrics are about. You know, whether it's I've got a melody for the lyrics, whether I've got a set of words that are angry words or words that are thought provocative. And then I sort of orchestrate the music around, you know, what mood is relayed to me through the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works the other way around, where I've got a nice groove going on and I sort of try and hum a little melody to it. And, you know, and to be honest with you, a lot of the catchier songs work better that way, because it's very hard to put, you know, music to political lyrics. When it's Baby, I Love You, it comes so much easier. The melodies, you know, they all form a lot more easier than when you start talking about political things, about weapons of mass destruction, about, you know, slavery and all that kind of stuff. And that's what I find. But like I said, it varies. But that's what generally happens when I create.
When you started writing lyrics in the mid-70s growing up in England, you weren't a kid that had the internet. And so what kind of books or what kind of people were you listening to that opened up your eyes about the world around you?
We didn't have the internet, you said?
Yeah.
Of course we did. I'm just kidding.
Well, you did in England?
Well, in England. That's how advanced England is. At that time, there's a lot of... We were at a time in England where we were suffering from an identification crisis, where we didn't seem as if we quite fitted into what was going on in England because of where our parents originated from. And we read books that were from, you know, African bookstores. We also had a lot of local, you know, community newspapers floating around. So that's where a lot of the knowledge, you know, and the information came from. And one of the earliest forms of information I can remember is the Angela Davis incident that took place around 1970-71, where she was, I don't know if you remember Angela Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should do this neck of the woods, right?
Yeah.
And the George Jackson incident, with George spending, you know, all those years in jail and then ultimately being shot in the back of the head, you know, while, you know, quote unquote, trying to escape. So these were the information we were getting in the papers, and, you know, the legacy of the Black Panthers. And we were, you know, so we were sort of trying to link ourselves to the struggle that was going on in the United States, because we see that was running parallel very much so with what was going on in England at the time.
worked with a lot of amazing people, politicians, filmmakers, but of all the people that you've had the opportunity to meet and work with, who's been the most inspirational to you?
Well, there's so many in so many different kinds of ways, man. I mean, obviously Bob Marley has to come top of the list because he was the catalyst for our very existence, to be honest with you. Peter Tosh is a very interesting character. I'm also awestricken by Gil Scott-Heron because he really educated me about the American way before we actually got here. You know, all those songs that he did back in the day, Winter in America, and, you know, Johannesburg, Tuskegee 626, tracks like that, you know, that Gil Scott, you know, sort of introduced us to American politics. So he's another one of my favorites. All the top musicians, San Carlos Santana, you know, we actually toured with him, and we were, you know, was amazed with his ability that, you know, each night was better than the night before with Carlos Santana. So we learned that, you know, it's you got to keep progressing no matter what. And compared to what he was doing when we first heard him on albums back in England, he improved drastically. So, you know, people like Stevie Wonder, we've hung out with Stevie quite a few times. We've always, you know, especially the keyboard player Selwyn's always found Stevie amazing. You know, Isaac Hayes, you know, my older brothers and sisters were always in tune with Isaac Hayes. And to meet someone that influenced my brothers and sisters also had an impact on me also. Danny Glover. Yeah, and we met Danny Glover in Senegal. And, you know, it was interesting meeting him because, you know, he made it known to us that he's there quite often. And, to, you know, an actor who's an activist as well like Danny Glover, because I think he had an incident involving the taxi cabs some time ago in New York, which we did a song some 15, 16 years ago on the same incident. And to know, you know, that he, you know, having the same kind of strife with who's more high profile than ourselves, you know, I mean, is a national name, household name in the United States and worldwide, and having the same problem. Taxi cab driver never stopped for me. All kind of excuses up his sleeve. Some say I'm off jury, some say I'm not free. The taxi cab driver never stopped for me. Because of my dreadlocks looking wild. My mugger or some bad guy. No, they never stop, they just pass me by. They treat me like a leper who was left to die. No! Driver, driver, won't stop for me. They care how I flag him down, he won't stop for me. Not stopping, they're just not stopping. Excuse me, Mike, can you get me a taxi? Bob Dylan, you know, he didn't say much. Looked like death warmed up, but, you know, he was also a character in itself. And, you know, at that time when I met Dylan, which was in the late 80s, we did a mini tour with him also. I never really used to listen to any Bob Dylan stuff. And then afterwards, you know, we decided to take on a project where we did the George Jackson track, which is on the last studio album that we did. A voice of protest and frustration within the system of deception. When I really started to study the lyrics of Bob Dylan, I do rank him as one of the best lyricists, you know, of all time, along with Sting of Police, Gil Scott-Heron and Bob Marley, Stevie Wonder on his best day. I mean, those guys, you know, rocking and rolling, as far as I'm concerned, lyrically. Because, you know, when it comes to lyrics, you know, it's like it's in a world of gunslingers, so you know a good lyricist when you hear one. And, you know, those are the guys I have up in high regards. You know, Curtis Mayfield, he's up there.
Yeah. That's fantastic. A long list of wonderful people.
Yeah. I have a question about some of your own lyrics in Make Us a Nation. You're saying a nation based on truth and rights. It's greed and jealousy that separates people, and it's time for liberation. You've had the opportunity with this career to travel all around the world, so you're our eyes, because not everybody's so fortunate to do that. What is liberation for the world or for yourself?
Liberation for me is like having a mind free spirit where it's not held down by the system, it's not held down by the administration, the status quo. And it's also liberation as far as you can worship and understand your religion or your culture and respect, you know, others that are not with your culture. And from your mind, you can be liberated to understand, because I think a lot of times that's what's created the war and strife throughout the world, is not understanding how another man, you know, perceive things. You know, I can remember when I used to read books on how the Aborigines were, you know, how the British and, you know, whoever is now residing in Australia used to try and control the youths because they had a different way of viewing things and seeing life. And they decided to take the children away from the parents at a very early age and try and reprogram them, thinking, well, that's the reason, because they're already adjusted to an older person. Maybe if we can start reprogramming them, and, you know, from scratch. And also we need to put things in the water that they get sterilized and they can't have as many children. And all that is just ignorance breeding on top of ignorance, as far as I'm concerned. So when I talk about liberation, I'm talking about, you know, the masses understanding and respecting each other. No more.
So if you could change one thing about the world, and only one thing, what would that one thing be?
I think what I've noticed throughout the world is that people are led like sheep. And, you know, when it comes to Germany, there was two world wars that took place, for example. And each time it was people that were being led by a tyrant. You look at what was going on in Iraq a few years ago. It was people that was led by a tyrant once again. And, you know, what's going on in Zimbabwe, what's going on in Darfur right now. And I notice there's a common denominator there, and it's a corrupted leader. So one of the things I'd probably change almost immediately is all the corrupted leaders there are on the planet. Because I think that's what it leads to more corruption, leads mm-hmm. to people hating. I mean, this year we talked about Steel Pulse 30th anniversary, since we were introduced to the world with the Hands of Revolution album. It's also been 30 years since we've been rocking against racism. It used to be a very significant event happening in England 30 years ago. And it's also been 40 years since the Rivers of Blood speech that took place in England with a character called Enoch Powell, who was the equivalent to David Duke here from the Ku Klux Klan, if you see what I'm saying. And he was talking about Britain being populated with ethnic minorities, how it's going to be rivers of blood throughout England because of the conflict that's going to happen.
A week or two ago, I fell into conversation with a constituent, a middle-aged, quite ordinary working man employed in one of our nationalised industries. After a sentence or two about the weather, he suddenly said, "If I had the money to go, I wouldn't stay in this country." I made some deprecatory reply to the effect that even this government wouldn't last forever, but he took no notice and continued. "I have three children, all of them been through grammar school, and two of them married now with family. I shan't be satisfied till I've seen them settled overseas. In this country, in 15 or 20 years' time, the black man will have the whip hand over the white man. I can already hear the chorus of execration. How dare I say such a horrible thing? How dare I stir up trouble and inflame feelings by repeating such a conversation? The answer is that I do not have the right not to do so. Here is a decent, ordinary fellow Englishman who, in broad daylight, in my own town, says to me, his Member of Parliament, that his country will not be worth living in for his children. I simply do not have the right to shrug my shoulders and think about something else. What he is saying, thousands and hundreds of thousands are saying and thinking. Not throughout Great Britain, perhaps, but in the areas that are already undergoing the total transformation to which there is no parallel in 1,000 years of English history.
It's just one ignorant man perpetuating negative ideas to, you know, to masses. And, you know, that's what I got a problem with generally.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So you guys have been together touring and making music since 1975. How do you keep your motivation and your inspiration to keep moving and to keep making more and doing more?
I have to say it's meeting people, meeting fans. Obviously, like I said before in the earlier part of the conversation, you know, reading, being perceptive. I watch a lot of television, contrary to what a lot of people think. A lot of people say, oh, TV, I could be sitting there watching that. A lot of things I've, you know, written about and is either watching a movie or watching, you know, TV. Mm-hmm. And one of the first songs that I wrote on the Hands Up Revolution album was a track called Soldiers. And, you know, it's about when soldiers came, they came to make us tame. But from that day till now on, we were jeered and laughed to scorn. That I was influenced by watching a movie called Soldier Blue. And when I mention Soldier Blue, not many Americans, especially for some reason, is not aware of that particular film. Are you aware of that film?
Mm-hmm.
It's a film starring Candice Bergman.
Oh.
I don't know if you heard of Candice Bergman.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. And it's about some soldiers slaughtering a whole nation of Indians, you know, in a particular region in the United States. I mean, that film's so long ago, I can't even remember. But that left such an impact on me because I saw what was going on there happened in India when, in the 20s, when Indians were slaughtered by the British, when British, you know, colonized India at that point. And also it happened in Africa a lot, with South African apartheid system. So I thought it was necessary to incorporate, you know, what I've experienced watching TV and watching films into, you know, what I wrote lyrically.
What about your song Prediction? What inspired? Do you remember what inspired that?
Prediction, that's from the Hands Up Revolution album. It was one of the songs that I used as a template for my commitment to Rastafari. Basically, it was at a time when I was being introduced to the whole Rastafarian philosophy, and where I was going through testing times and trials and tribulations, trying to see if I can go with this particular culture and this particular ideology. Because our parents was the very ideology that our parents left Jamaica, mm-hmm. and was running away from. I don't know if you remember, Bonnie Wailer had a track called Blackheart Man. Mm-hmm. Well, that was pretty much the thing that was going on throughout, you know, communities, black communities, whether you were in Jamaica or in England, where your parents and everybody else were saying, don't go near those people because they were Blackheart Men. They're no good. They're up to, and then you all of a sudden you grow up and you be one, mm-hmm. you know. So Prediction was almost like a template for me relating, you know, Haile Selassie, for example, to the Messiah, Marcus Garvey to John the Baptist, so many characters that we are tangible, that we know of in this present day time that I associated with the Bible. And it was true me identifying myself with the Rastafarian philosophy that brought about that song.
Prediction, yeah, from the days of old. Prediction, yeah, from way back when. The years just sent, years just sent. Prediction, all a long time ago. Selassie was neglected. He kept his head.
We got quite a few fan questions. I'll start from Priscilla. She wants to know how you keep your dreadlocks sticking up. And what's the secret?
That name sounds familiar. Do you know Crystalline?
No. These people send these.
They sent them in to us.
We're gonna interview you.
How do I what?
Keep your dreadlocks sticking up. She saw some pictures of you.
Oh, that was back in the day. I mean, it's changed direction now.
Yeah, they're so cool.
Back in the day, I used to wear a bowler hat. I think what you call a derby in this country. And, you know, this took the shape of the hat after a while. I didn't bother tearing it down. And that was it.
Okay.
It took that mode. And after a while, it got so heavy, I couldn't get through doors. I couldn't get into cars, things like that. You know, every time I washed it, it took ages to dry, all that kind of stuff. So in the end, I had to twist it, split it, and do all kinds of stuff to make it happen, continue happening. So it's just changed direction.
Uh-huh. Carol from New Jersey, she wants this question directed to any or all of the band. She wants to know if any of you will marry her.
Wow. Wow. I'm footloose and fancy free myself right now.
There's a chance there. Did you hear that?
Okay, they're trying.
Bigler from Milwaukee. When are you guys coming to Milltown again? And also, how long have you guys been together? I think you guys are awesome.
Where?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Milltown.
Weren't we just there?
I think you might have just been there.
We just hit a festival there recently.
He wants you back right now.
Oh, yeah? We love Milwaukee. Yeah, it's, who knows? I mean, to be honest with you, we're kind of snookered right now. We're literally back on the road to pay bills. You know, the IRS is on our case like everybody else, so we're paying them. But, you know, ideally what we'd like to do is take time off and, you know, do another studio recording so we can hit Milwaukee as long as we like.
Great.
You know, we're being snookered now and we're sort of itemizing and selecting places we need to play without, you know, media overkill. So, you know, that's our main intention. So who knows? I mean, we hope to have an album completed and out on the road probably this time next year. You know, I'm I work slowly but methodical. And after that, I could go to New Milwaukee every day of the week, if you like.
Great. Well, that kind of takes care of Andy's question from Cambodia. He's a big fan of yours. And he wanted to know when you would start making a new record.
Well, lyrics are written, demos and ideas have been put down, but nothing's in full swing as yet. We've got so many things to knock out of the way. I've been, you know, I've been put at gunpoint for a Beatles track to complete in a few days. Yeah,
wow.
A track called Good Morning, I think it is.
Oh, that's a good one.
And
what's that for?
Well, it's for someone, a producer in New York, which, you know, I'm not quite clear who's for, to be honest. I just do it, and it's, you know, that's it. I've been pressed to do a Barack Obama track, so, you know, it's got to be up and running soon. And, you know, we're doing an album during the process, so, you know, how long it will take, it's anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Fantastic. We're looking forward to that. We need a new album.
Right.
He also wanted to know, is there any chance you've played Japan? Can you go to Cambodia?
You know something. If we had someone who we knew about promotions in Cambodia, because there's talks of us hitting New Caledonia, which is 1,000 miles off the east side of Australia. And en route, there ain't nothing wrong with hitting places like Cambodia, to be honest with you. That's sometime in December. I mean, if there's a promoter who can make it happen there, I don't see why we can't hit it en route. It's a place that we haven't been before. So it won't be a case of media overkill.
Yeah.
So that'd be fine, you know.
They'd love it, I'm sure.
They'd be happy to have you.
Yeah.
Okay,
one more fan question.
Prilby from California wants to know, what inspired you to write the lyrics to Chant a Psalm?
Wow. Like I said, I mean, there was a period of time when, you know, all kinds of things was happening with Steel Pulse. I was going through a breakup at the time. We just got kicked off the record label at the time, which was Island Records. The contract ran out and no one wished to renew it. We were hitting the United States for the first time. All kinds of things was going horribly wrong with us at that time. And, you know, like I said, it was a period of time in my life where, you know, it was in the early stages of, you know, the Rastafarian development within me. And there were certain things, you know, a lot of biblical passages read to me and myself reading then brought about the inspiration to write that song.
Have anything you'd like to say to friends, family, or fans out there?
Well, for the fans, friends, and families out there, that we love you ever so much, and we thank you tremendously for the support you've given us over the years, and not stepped back. You know, even when our career, you know, had pitfalls in it, and they sort of hung on with it, wind there for us. And without you guys, there would never be us. What can I say? You know, and we give thanks for that.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right, and thank you for yours.
And we're Pirate Pods, and we like to end our podcast with a pirate impression or a joke. Can you do that for us?
We're Pirate Pods. They're my pirate! Kick them out! All right, we're the pirates. We're the Pirate Podding. Wow, it sounds like a tongue twister to me. Pick a pick a pick a pirate podder. Huh. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow's what we're on about. Tomorrow's what we're on about. Not yesterday. Tomorrow's what we're on about.